Grace's Folly by Amanda Watkins.
Grace Pottle lived a routine, ordinary life in a very ordinary small town where she was the chief librarian. A stickler for timekeeping, she was ruled by the clock. She got up at the same time every morning and went to bed at the same time every night. Even her cat, Hector, knew the rules. They left the house every morning at 8:15. Grace to go to the library and Hector to busy himself locally or snooze on the patio. At 6 every evening, Hector would be waiting by the front door when she came home to the picturesque cottage on the outskirts of town where she had been born nearly 60 years ago. She couldn't envisage living anywhere else, and the very thought made her panic, especially now that retirement was looming. However, the everyday cost of living was rising every month, and Grace reluctantly took the decision that the only way she could afford to stay in the cottage was to take in a lodger. Now, it just so happened that young Kevin Stevens had started working at the library. He loved books and reading and settled into the work at the library very happily. The only drawback to this otherwise ideal life for Kevin was his journey into work. He lived 20 miles and 2 bus journeys away in the family home. So, when Grace announced she was looking for a lodger and the house was within walking distance of the library, he jumped at it. Grace and Kevin were like chalk and cheese, but they rubbed along all right. Grace was very set in her ways and wouldn't entertain the idea of having a mobile phone or a laptop at home. She had reluctantly learned how to use the computer at the library, but had no wish to explore the world of the internet or World Wide Web any further. Kevin, on the other hand, seemed to have his phone permanently welded onto his hand and was into every sort of social media going. It took Kevin a while to get used to Grace's strict timekeeping. But after a lot of tutting and shaking of her head, Grace said it would be all right if Kevin came home after 10 a couple of nights a week. He loved his new living arrangements. He'd gone from sharing a bedroom with 2 of his brothers to having his own room and bathroom. After a couple of weeks of getting to know one another, a friendship of sorts developed. The sort of friendship that can develop between different generations. Grace and Hector got used to having another person in the house, and Kevin got used to having only one other person in the house. He particularly liked coming in from work and standing still in the hallway where the only sound was the gentle ticking of the grandfather clock. As the evenings got lighter and warmer, they would sit out in the garden with their cups of tea after dinner. It was a pretty standard cottage garden, quite long and narrow. It had a shed and a small compost heap at the bottom, a large well-stocked herbaceous border down one side, and a pond with a few water lilies and the usual marginals. There was a large stone statue next to the pond, but Kevin wasn't sure what it was supposed to be. Grace said that her mother had had a small kitchen garden near the house, but that had gone now. And that was the only time Kevin ever heard Grace mention her mother. She spoke quite fondly of her father and had nursed him until he died following a stroke some 15 years ago, but she never spoke of her mother. And so life continued at its slow, leisurely pace for the next 3 months. Kevin and some friends booked a caravan for a couple of weeks on the south coast and had a whale of a time. And gradually the nights began to draw in and the flowers in the garden began to die back. One day, Kevin had just started checking through and stamping a pile of returned books when a photograph fell out of one of them. It was a faded colour photo of a young man standing in what looked like the back garden of a cottage. He was smiling and holding a wine glass in his hand. There was something familiar about the garden and cottage. Then he saw the odd-looking statue and realised it was the house he was living in. Grace was just passing the desk. "Hey, Miss Pottle," he said. He was always very formal at work. "Look at this. Isn't it your house? And who's that bloke? I don't think it's your father." Grace looked at it and stiffened. She grabbed the photograph. "Oh, he was an old friend of the family. Long gone now. It's of no importance. Just throw it away." But what if it's important to whoever took this book out? I can easily find out who that is and return it." "No. No, don't do that," she said. "It's obviously a very old photograph, probably just being used as a bookmark. Forget about it." And off she went. Clearly rattled, thought Kevin. As he worked his way through the pile of returned books, three more photographs fell out, all of the same smiling young man. Curiosity got the better of him, and he looked up the person who had taken the books out. It was a Mrs. Ida Turner, and she lived out on the other side of town. The following day was Kevin's half day, so he decided to take the bus out to where Mrs. Turner lived. Pear Tree Cottage, Brox Lane, wasn't too difficult to find. Up the garden path he went and knocked on the door. No answer, so he knocked again. Still no answer, so he went to the house next door and knocked. A small, round lady opened the door. "You're a bit early," she said, "but just hang on and I'll get the keys." "Keys?" said Kevin. Yes, you have come about the sofa, haven't you?" said the small, round lady. "No, I haven't come about a sofa," said Kevin. "I was hoping to speak to Mrs. Turner, who, I believe, lives next door to you." "Did," said the small, round lady. "She died a month ago, and I've been helping to clear out her cottage. I'm Vera Marsden, by the way. Ida and I were friends and neighbours for over 40 years. Well, what did you want with her?" Kevin explained about the photographs in the books. "I thought they must mean something to someone and they might like them back." "They meant everything to Ida. They're of her son, Freddie," she said. "He was her only child and she adored him, but he disappeared." "Disappeared?" asked Kevin. Well, yes, that's the only way to put it. He'd been going out with this girl, Grace Pottle, for a while, and Ida was sure he was going to ask her to marry him. But he went out one day and never came back. The Pottles said they were expecting him to call, but he never did. And nobody's seen hide nor hair of him since." "Were the police involved?" asked Kevin. "Oh, yes, and Ida was beside herself. Of course, there was no CCTV or computers in those days, and the police did the best they could. But he was never found." "Oh, I see. How sad," said Kevin. "It was," said Vera. "Mind you, I was never very keen on that Grace Pottle, and I don't think Ida was either. Well, I suppose she could be all right, and her father was nice enough. But her mother... well, you wouldn't want to cross her, that's all I can say. Well, no one was that surprised or upset when she decided to walk out on her husband and daughter and went to live with her sister near Whitby." Kevin thanked Mrs. Marsden and left. Well, this was a mystery. Why would a man who was close to a mother who adored him and who was contemplating getting engaged suddenly up and disappear, leaving no trace at all? And why was Grace obviously ruffled by the photograph, and why did she dismiss the young man as an old family friend of no consequence? So many questions and no answers. The only question that had been answered, after a fashion, was that Grace's mother had left them and gone to live in Yorkshire. He had a feeling that broaching the subject of the photograph again wouldn't go down well, and decided not to mention his visit to Ida Turner's house. Kevin was sitting at the small desk in his bedroom, looking out onto the garden a few days later, and speculating on what he had discovered. And his imagination began to run riot. Now stop this, he said to himself. You've been reading too many books, and they're giving you strange ideas. Strange ideas, indeed. They even invaded his sleep, and he found himself dreaming of bodies gasping for air in the murky water of the pond, or scrabbling to get out from under the patio slabs, of bodies clawing at the underneath of the shed, or under the lawn, or even the flower beds. This had to stop. Over the course of the next few days, he sneaked off during his lunch breaks and did as much searching as he could using the library computer. He could find no trace of death certificates for Grace's father or Freddie Turner, and no record of a Freddie Turner ever having married, nor did they appear to be on any electoral rolls. Nor did an Emily Pottle turn up in any records he could access for Whitby. On his next two half days, Kevin poked around the garden. He had no idea what he was looking for, or, if he found it, what it would look like. All he knew was that two people had disappeared off the face of the earth, and they were last seen at Grace Pottle's address. So he walked round the garden, looking closely at everything, but seeing nothing. He didn't know how long the patio had been there, or the pond, or the shed, or the flower beds. And what was he looking for anyway? The following week, on Grace's half day, Kevin came home from work to find Grace out in the garden. As there can't be many more balmy evenings like this left this year, I thought it would be rather nice to have a last high tea out in the garden. Nice one, Grace, said Kevin. I like it. Oh, are those eclairs I see? They are, Kevin, she said. Tuck in and I'll pour the tea. Have you got your eclair? Here's your tea. I've put the sugar in. They sat and enjoyed their tea and eclairs. Then Grace said, I understand you've been doing a lot of searches on the library computer. Yes, said Kevin, a bit flustered. Look, I didn't tell you, but I went to see the person who had taken out the library books that had the old photos in, and it turned out to be someone you knew, but you shrugged it off and... Well, I'm afraid it piqued my curiosity. And you discovered it was Ida Turner, whose son had disappeared a long time ago, said Grace. Well, yes. And it seems that her son Freddie was more than just an old family friend, wasn't he? Grace looked down at her lap and said quietly, Yes, he was. And you deserve to know the truth, Kevin. I've never told anyone what really happened, and it's time I did. Freddie was the love of my life, and there was nothing I wanted more than to marry him. Well, what on earth went wrong? Asked Kevin. My mother, that's what went wrong, she said vehemently. She was a nasty woman. She was always so bitter and twisted. She never had a decent word to say to or about anyone. My father was such a gentle soul. I can only think she must have been a lot nicer when she met him. She made our lives misery, and she was never nice to Freddie. I thought she'd jump at the chance to get rid of me, but she flew into a rage when Freddie said he'd like to marry me. She told him to leave and never come near us again, that I was going to make something of my life and not waste it with him. He'd always gritted his teeth and been so polite to her. But he told her she was the most evil, horrid woman he'd ever met, that she must have a personality disorder and needed to see a doctor. Then he stepped forward, grabbed my hand and said, "Come on, Grace, we're leaving." We were in the garden by the pond, and she flew at him with the bread knife and plunged it into his back. It was awful. He died instantly. She showed no remorse, laughed and said, "Well, that's taken care of him." My father lunged at her to take the knife off her. We just dug out all the earth to make the pond. And she tripped over a mound and hit her head on the statue, which I'd bought, and she'd been very rude about, of course. Oh, she was obviously dead. Dad and I looked at each other. Our world had changed in two brief, horrific minutes, and nothing would ever be the same again. "Well, what on earth did you do? You didn't call the police, did you?" said Kevin. "No, we didn't," said Grace quietly. My father had gone a very worrying colour and began shaking. "We were in the garden with two dead bodies. Nobody would ever believe the truth. So I told Dad to go into the house. I grabbed a shovel and dug a trench in the bottom of the pond, large enough to take a body, which I covered and made it all as flat as I could. Then the pond padding and lining went in, followed by the water a day or so later. So that took care of dear Freddie. For my mother, I dug out her kitchen bed as deep as I could, encased her in plastic and tipped her into it. Then I raked it flat and sprinkled grass seed on it. I did it all in a detached, robotic sort of way, without feeling anything. It was a living nightmare. My father and I never spoke of it. I cleared my mother's stuff out of the house, packed it all in boxes and put them in the attic. By this time, Kevin's jaw had dropped. He didn't know what to say. He stuttered, "This is why you never mention your mother or anything about your past." "Yes," said Grace, "and it's been an unbearable burden. I've made sure I never got close to anyone ever again." "And then you came along, innocent, personable. And I like you, Kevin. I really do. But you know now." "I do, Grace, I do, and my heart goes out to you. It's a heartbreaking story. It was very brave of you to tell me, but you have my word. We need never speak of it again." "Actually, Kevin, you can speak of it. When I'm no longer here, I think it's time the truth came out. It's too late for poor Ida Turner, of course. And I was more sad for her than anything else. But if the pond and the grass under the kitchen window are investigated, the proof is there." "Okay," said Kevin, "but you'll be around for years, and I'm bound to have moved on by then." "No, I don't think so," said Grace. "You see, I've come to the end of the road. I can't live with this burden any longer. It never leaves me. I've been saving sleeping pills and paracetamol for ages. And there was enough in my tea and eclair to give me the peace I crave.
No, no, said Kevin. I'll get help. You can still be saved.
I can't, she said. I've made sure of that. I put sleeping pills in your tea, just enough to knock you out while I get to the point of no return. Goodbye, Kevin. You're a lovely young man. You'll do well in the library. Look after Hector. Kevin? Kevin? Sweet dreams, dear boy.
Grace's Folly was written and read by Amanda Watkins. Production was by Dave Baldwin. The theme music, Ophelia's Dream, is from bensound.com.